all kinds of stuff this week, and but before I get into a lot of that stuff, I wanted to sort of run down some of the particulars that I give you every week. If you would like to get in touch with me here at the show, you can send me an email, the email address is allthings@allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthings@allthingsreconsidered.org. I leave that email up all through the show, so if you send me a note, you want something, you want to comment on something, you know, usually during the breaks I try to catch up on stuff, and I can send you a reply, or maybe even reply over the air. If you want me to read something on air, then please do send it to me. Also, tonight we are doing a call-in segment later on in the show, and the number you can, well, obviously you do have access to the web or you wouldn't be listening to this program. If you have access to the web, you can go to our webpage at allthingsreconsidered.org, click on Preview, Show Preview, and right there at the bottom of the page you will be able to see our number that you can call in. Now, what I would like to ask you to do is to hold your calls until such a time that we're ready to take some, and actually it'll be after an interview later on during the show, probably about 45 minutes from now. Tonight we're featuring an interview with Mark Rudd, who is former National Secretary of Students for a Democratic Society. I had the wonderful, fantastic opportunity to be able to talk with him last week, right before the holiday, and he consented to a series of interviews, and actually we're going to be doing part one of that interview this week and part two next week on New Year's Day. So this may be the only show in liberal dumb or progressive dumb that is actually live today. Actually, there was one before me. I'm sorry. Rama tried to do a show, and he was booted off the air. Sorry about that, Rama. If you'd like to, so stay tuned for that interview. If you'd like to chat with us, you can come to the Tom Hartman chat room. That's T-H-O-M, Hartman with two N's, .com. Click on live chat, and it'll take you right there to the chat room where you can be a part of that experience if you are so inclined. Fantastic. Tom is just a wonderful guy, award-winning author and radio host who, really cares about a lot about progressive causes, and definitely, you know, is just fantastic with the use of his resources. So please do join us there. Again, we are archived at whiterosesociety.org. A lot of announcements tonight, eh? WhiteRoseSociety.org, Ben Birch, who is no relation to me, at least that I'm aware of. He's out of Chicago. I'm out of North Carolina. But he archives this show at WhiteRoseSociety.org, and if you're interested in that show or in this and getting this there, then you know you can go there and download earlier shows going back, I think, to August. So we also have archives and podcasts on our website as well. All right. I think I've gotten all the obligatory announcements out of the way. Before we get over to the interview, I just wanted to tell all of you who are listening, Merry Christmas, and from the bottom of my heart, just because, you know, if you're listening tonight, I'm just grateful. Thank you for joining us. And I certainly hope that your holiday was everything you expected it to be. I know mine was. I'm a kind of guy that has a tough time with holidays. But you know, so. By the way, my wife is here. She's going to be the one receiving the calls. Her name is Debbie, and so if she answers the phone and you hear a really high pitched voice, it's not me. It's somebody else. But we went out and had a good time with family today and sat around and talked about interest rates and mortgages and all that wonderful, you know, acceptable establishment-related type of topics, and watched part of Willy Wonka, the movie. That's a very disturbed person, by the way, that Willy Wonka fella. Kind of like our pal George. Speaking of George, boy, what a segue. I've got some paper here in front of me. That's paper, radio paper, and on this piece of paper, I have a bit of information that I thought was really interesting to pass along. I mean, I found it to be really interesting. I don't know if anybody else will find this to be interesting, but one of our great friends over at Democratic Underground did some research and found that Bush himself, in his own words, proved himself to be a liar. Now, you know, every time he opens his mouth, we pretty much know that he's lying anyway. I mean, because it's, you know, he gets that, you know, gotta talk like this, and every time I gotta talk like this, and okay. My friend Le Proletariat in the chat room says that I've offended him for saying Merry Christmas. Well, how about this? Happy Festivus, you bastards. Okay, now I've offended everyone else. So he's an equal opportunity being offended. Anyway, last week's radio address, Bush said, I'm going to quote Bush, "In the weeks following the terrorist attacks on our nation, I authorized the National Security Agency, consistent with U.S. law and the Constitution, to intercept the international communications of people with known links to al-Qaeda and related terrorist organizations." In other words, with no court orders, and he thinks that he has the constitutional ability to do that. Now, this is from a campaign speech in Buffalo, New York, in April of 2004. Bush says, "Secondly, there are such things as roving wiretaps." Now, by the way, anytime you hear the United States government talking about wiretap, a wiretap requires a court order. Nothing has changed, by the way. When we're talking about chasing down terrorists, we're talking about getting a court order before we do so. It's important for our fellow citizens to understand, when you think Patriot Act, constitutional guarantees are in place when it comes to doing what is necessary to protect our homeland, because we value the Constitution. Okay, so which is it, man? You know, that's the question that I have. Is it the one thing, or is it the other?
Following the terrorist attacks on our nation, I authorized the National Security Agency, consistent with U.S. law and the Constitution, to intercept the international communications of people with known links to al-Qaeda and related terrorist organizations.
And what he's saying there is that he can do it. Now, this campaign speech, you know, those politicians, they'll say anything. They will. They'll say anything to get elected. In this particular instance, he basically said that he would follow the law to get elected. Now, hopefully, any politician that we elect would follow the law. You know, not only would they get elected, but they would more than likely follow the law. Okay. You know, am I the only one that's bothered by this?
Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
And neither do we. Yeah, that's readily apparent. Okay, that's our first little tidbit for the top of the night. I just, you know, I wanted to pass that along because, you know, the longer that these guys talk, the more they contradict themselves, and the more that they contradict themselves, the worse they make themselves look. And the worse they make themselves look, the worse chances they have of returning to power after elections, right? Or wait a minute, do they own the voting machines too? Because if they own the voting machines too, then we might be in trouble. I do have another quick, just a little tidbit to throw at you before we go take a break. And this is out of today's Chicago Tribune, actually. This is by John Cruzan. This is out of the story out of Italy. When the CIA decide, this is about rendering. Now, before I say much more about rendering, I just want to say, you know, okay, rendering, okay. The term rendering. First of all, I have trouble with the term rendering. Okay, rendering means bringing, you know, or basically what they're talking about is they're talking about kidnapping someone, putting a hood over their head, putting them in the back of a van, you know, jettisoning them to the nearest airport where they stick them on a private plane, generally shackled to the floor or shackled down, you know, drugged, you know, put to sleep. They put them on this plane, and then on this private plane, they fly them to some, you know, strange place in North Africa or Eastern Europe, Romania, you know, to some of the Eastern Bloc countries that still have some of those notorious prisons over there, and also in North Africa. Apparently some of those prisons moved to North Africa, to Morocco, is what I'm hearing, what I've read. But the rendering part is where they actually put them on the plane, drug them, and shackled them down, and then they render this terrorist to from one place to another. Okay, in the real world, if you or I were to participate in some action like that, it would be called kidnapping. And it would actually be called abduction. But according to the United States government, it's not abduction, it's actually rendering. So, there you go. I'm just, you know, wanted to say that because I just think that's ridiculous. But when the CIA decides to render a terrorism suspect living abroad for interrogation in Egypt or another friendly Middle East nation, it apparently spares no expense. Italian prosecutors wrote in court papers that the CIA spent enormous amounts of money during the 6 weeks it took the agency to figure out how to grab 39-year-old Muslim preacher Abu Omar off the streets of Milan and throw him in a van and drive to the airport. First to arrive in Milan was the surveillance team, and the hotels they chose were among the best Europe has to offer. Especially popular was the Gilton Crystal Principe de Savoia, with acres of burnished wood, paneling, and plush carpets, where a single room costs $588 a night, a club sandwich goes for $28.75, and a Diet Coke adds another $9.35. According to hotel records later obtained by the Milan police, CIA operatives managed to ring up more than $9,000 in room charges alone. The CIA's bill at the Principe for seven operatives came up to $39,995, not counting meals, parking, and other hotel services. And one can only wonder what the other hotel services might have been. I mean, can you say in-room movie? Oh my gosh! So you know, so we're sitting here and we're looking at this stuff and we're going, oh my goodness! Not only are they kidnapping people, but they're doing it, you know, at an astronomical rate. Boy, they really put the con in conservative, don't they? My name is Bruce Birch. I'm really, really, really glad to have you along with us tonight. We're going to go ahead and take our first break of the evening, but when we get back, we're going to go right into the interview with Mark Rudd, and the first half of that interview for this week. And we'll be taking your phone calls after that interview, so stay tuned. You're listening to All Things Reconsidered.
Head on.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember it. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts. The issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday nights, 7 to 10.
Head on.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. You know, it's bad enough having a president who openly breaks the law and brags about it. It's worse when our so-called professional media, who are supposed to watch out for things like corruption and abuse of governmental power, helps cover the president's crimes. To be specific, it turns out that the New York Times, the paper of record, the gray lady of American print journalism, knew for the last 2 years that Mr. Bush was illegally monitoring American citizens, but said nothing about it, because the administration told them that no laws were being broken and that it was a matter of national security. I'm curious, when you get one of these high-salary journalism jobs, do you have to put your brain in storage? You'd think that after having been lied to time and time again by this administration, you'd learn not to take their word on anything. I work in a place where people make about $6 an hour, and even they're not that gullible. But that's the state of the American press these days. No wonder newspaper circulation throughout the country is dropping like a stone. Of course, the Times is still a bastion of professionalism compared to radio or television, which, sad to say, is where most Americans get their news these days. To listen to the assorted blowhard pundits, this is no big deal, and we should worry about, oh, say, the phony war on Christmas. I think it's yet another example of how just having a college education and a high-paying job doesn't mean you have any more active brain cells than the rest of the unwashed masses. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
No, not the yacht.
Darling, wake up. You're having a nightmare.
Oh, it was terrible. Oh. I dreamed we lost our billions, and we were middle class.
There, there.
We were both working, and we could barely pay our bills. The children had to go to public schools. Oh. We had something called an HMO.
Oh, you poor thing.
It seems so real. We couldn't even afford my Botox.
Oh, sweetheart, go back to sleep. I'll write another campaign check tomorrow.
President George W. Bush, keeping alive the American dream. For some of us.
Easily paid for by BillionairesForBush.com.
You are listening to my dad, Bruce Birch, on All Things Reconsidered. Even I think he's kind of smart.
This is Bruce Birch back with you on All Things Reconsidered. I figured that was probably as close as I was going to get to a hymn tonight. You know, little Jesus is just all right for you. Okay, we're going to go right into this interview. Mark Rudd, pretty amazing guy. Mark Rudd was the National Secretary of Students for a Democratic Society and was... also one of the founders of the Weathermen, which was a fairly militant... I would say they were a little bit more than militant. They were actually... Well, they bombed places. Does that tell you how militant they were? And I don't... You know, I didn't ask him about that because I didn't want... You know, I didn't want to, like, put him on the spot of whether he could incriminate himself or not. But we had a really great conversation, the first half of which you will hear this week, the second half of which you will hear next week. But it was a really fantastic conversation, and he will also be a returning guest on the show. But I'm going to go ahead and get right on over to that interview. And this is my interview, or the first part of that interview, I should say, with Mr. Mark Rudd, formerly of SDS. All right, I have on the line with me Mark Rudd, and Mark is one of the founders of Weather Underground. And also former National Secretary of Students for a Democratic Society. And he's our guest today on this special Christmas Day edition of All Things Reconsidered. Mark, how are you doing over there?
Very well, very well.
Well, we're really glad to have you on with us. First, I wanted to thank you for joining me on All Things Reconsidered. It's great to have you with us. And also, just to give folks some background, in 2002, there's a documentary called The Weather Underground that came out on DVD, and there were a number of showings around the country, and you were featured in this documentary as a principal figure in the Weathermen. Can you tell our listeners, just sort of give a basic background of what SDS was, what the Weathermen were, and what kind of prompted the creation of these groups?
Long story. We could talk for hours about the history of SDS. I'll try to make it all as brief as I can.
Okay.
Starting from 1962, Students for a Democratic Society grew as the war in Vietnam grew, although its original when it was founded, the war wasn't at the major level that it was later. But with its refounding statement in 1962, it became from that time it became the largest student radical organization until its demise in 1969. I myself was a member of Columbia SDS, a chapter of Students for a Democratic Society. There's a C-130 plane passing right overhead. They practice landings and takeoffs. Maybe you can hear it.
Yeah, it's fine.
I live right under a runway.
Oh, wow.
Approach. There's an Air Force base right here where they store over 2,000 nuclear weapons at Kirtland Air Force Base in Albuquerque, New Mexico. If they want to look for weapons of mass destruction, they should come to Albuquerque, find them right here.
And you can point them right out, right?
What's that?
I said, and you can point them right out there, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're obvious. But the history of SDS is an intense one. I was saying, I was involved in Columbia SDS from the time I was a freshman in 1965. I was 18 years old. And I got to Columbia right a few months after the United States attacked Vietnam with main force troops in the spring of 65. I got to Columbia in the fall. There was already a very active anti-war organization at Columbia, and it eventually became an SDS chapter. I joined up and spent 3 years organizing at Columbia in the spring of 1968 because of a number of events that had happened in Vietnam and the Tet Offensive, and also because of the murder of Martin Luther King.
Right.
Columbia University erupted in what up to that time was the largest student anti-war and anti-racism rebellion of the era. I was a chairman of Columbia SDS at that time and became kind of nationally notorious. New York being the media capital of the country, if not the world.
Sure.
So I became very widely known. I was thrown out of Columbia and became a traveler, a national traveler and a regional traveler for SDS. See, SDS was made up of chapters,
okay.
Autonomous chapters at over 400 college campuses and high school campuses. So I became a national, after I was thrown out of Columbia, I became a traveler for SDS, and eventually a year later was elected national secretary of SDS. That was the last national convention of SDS.
That was
completely split apart. Now, this is a long history,
sure.
And I could talk for the next couple hours if you want on the way in which SDS split apart.
Uh-huh.
Part of the what happened was that I was involved with a faction of SDS known at the time as the Weathermen.
Okay.
We saw the job of whites in this country to begin armed struggle to support the colonized peoples within this country, the non-white people, and the people around the world who were already fighting imperialism, such as the Vietnamese and the Cubans. So we thought we would open up a guerrilla front against the government of the United States, and that eventually became the organization known as the Weather Underground, which emerged from the ruins of SDS.
Okay, now when did that occur in the at the 69 convention in Chicago, or?
Well, what happened in 69 in June was that the our faction took over the national office.
Okay,
and we oriented the organization more towards hyper-militancy, confronting the police in the streets.
Okay.
So we called for a national action, and SDS had perhaps, who knows, 100,000 members at that time on campuses. But only we called for a national action, in October of 69, and very few people came.
That was known as the Days of Rage, is that right?
It became known later as the Days of Rage.
Okay.
In which there was all kinds of street fighting, and hundreds of people of us were arrested and beaten and all kinds of bad stuff. But that really, our taking over SDS was really the death of SDS. And it's, we actually at one point later, subsequent to the national action, the Days of Rage, in October of 69, we made a decision to actually scuttle SDS in order to build the underground. We thought that the two were incompatible and that SDS was a drag on us being as revolutionary. It was only radical, and so it was a drag on us being as revolutionary as we needed to be. The whole thing was a giant hallucination, the hallucination of revolution. I could go into that aspect of it if you like.
Sure, because one of the things that...
I think the worst thing I've ever been involved in my life was the decision to destroy SDS.
Well, tell me something. I know that, you know, you said that when you guys took over SDS, when that faction took over SDS, that there was an intention to take it to a more hyper militant place. When did it occur to you, or when did it occur to those that you were organizing with, that militancy was the direction you guys wanted to take it?
When did it first? Well, you mean militancy or guerrilla warfare?
They're pretty much the same, aren't they?
No, they're not quite the same.
Okay.
You could have a militant organization that engages in street fighting, for example, and which is not legal,
mm-hmm.
But it does other legal things.
But it's not
so
like, right,
maybe
okay.
Maybe some people would be indicted for conspiracy or something like that, but you could maintain a legal organization. But if you declare war on the government of the United States, your whole organization is has to go underground.
I understand. So and
there is definitely a relationship, because it's unsustainable over a long period of time to have a street fighting organization. It'll be infiltrated. It'll be set up. It'll be the target of provocateurs and surveillance, and eventually there'll be all kinds of arrests and things like that. So it definitely, there's a relationship between one might be considered a stage, and the natural outcome of which is a fully underground organization, which is where we went.
Okay.
It kind of happened step by step, and we didn't have a conception that guerrilla warfare was the goal. Although I do think we were emulating consciously a strategy that Che Guevara put forth, known as the FOCO theory,
okay.
Which is that if a small group begins armed revolutionary action, the masses, whether it be peasants or workers or revolutionary students or whatever, will follow that group. That was their analysis of what happened in Cuba in 56 to 59. A lot of people died behind that theory, including Che Guevara himself in Bolivia in 67. But so we were kind of caught up. We were Guevaras, in the sense that we believed in this strategy. It's a terrible strategy. It doesn't work.
So you guys, okay, so in 69, now tell me, I wanted to step back just a minute before we get too far away from this. I'm kind of interested in that first action that you guys took in November of 67 when Dean Rusk came to New York.
That was actually my first arrest.
Wow.
Funny you should mention that, right? But where did you uncover that one?
Well, actually, I did some research online, and it's in a Wikipedia article about you.
Oh, interesting. Whoever wrote that article got their information right. October of 1967, a huge demonstration occurred at the Pentagon. It was very, very militant, in the sense of angry, and some parts of the demonstration. I was not there. Now, SDS did not officially support that mobilization in Washington at the Pentagon. I believe it was October 21st, 1967.
Okay.
But what happened was that a number of SDS chapters and individuals did go, And they were very militant, confronting the National Guard and the troops that were called out and the local police. And my chapter had decided not to go. We had some kind of crazy notion that there was a contradiction between going to Washington and working locally. We were in love with our ideas, and we liked to, nitpick.
Okay.
But we didn't go. Well, the next day, Sunday morning, I'm looking at the New York Times and saying to myself, holy, look at all that was accomplished by this incredibly militant outpouring of opposition to the war. They surrounded the Pentagon. Thousands, tens of thousands of people surrounded the Pentagon and turned it into like a... It made it have to defend itself, so to speak, against the people. So I said, gosh, we really must have missed the boat. So I was one of the people who, a week or so later, we learned that Dean Rusk was coming to speak at a dinner for the Council of Foreign Relations, which is a ruling class kind of a think tank.
Sure.
on American foreign policy. And he was speaking at the Hilton Hotel in New York, and I organized a number of Columbia people and other people from other SDS chapters to come there and do a disobedience, a civil disobedience action of blocking access to the Hilton and stopping traffic and kind of hit and run techniques. The goal wasn't like nonviolent civil disobedience where you just sit down and wait for the cops to arrest you. We thought, well, this is our form of militancy is going to be to not get arrested, to disrupt traffic and then run away. And I was kind of like a street leader in this thing. I was also one of the planners of the thing. And the cops, they had infiltrated, and some plainclothes cops fingered me, and I was arrested for incitement to riot. So that was my first arrest. It's a wonderful demonstration. I mean, imagine when the United States is in a wartime situation, as it is now. It's attacked a third world country, and wouldn't it be wonderful if Condoleezza Rice, the Secretary of State, couldn't come to New York to deliver a speech because tens of thousands of students and other people were out in the streets protesting and blocking access to the hotel. I think it was a good action. I think things like that, it would be wonderful if there was that level of opposition right now.
Well, or if she couldn't come to New York and shop at Giannos or whatever it was that she went to shop her shoes there.
Yeah. I mean, it's as if, the United States is at war. The United States is murdering tens of thousands of people abroad, and that's okay. No, it's not okay, and she shouldn't be out shopping with impunity without irate, angry citizens saying, you can't do this in our name.
Yeah. Well, I totally agree. Was that sort of the movement or the mobilization that cemented your, I mean, how did you come out of that?
You mean the arrest or my thinking?
Well, your thinking.
Well, yeah, I thought militancy is a great thing. Unfortunately, I kind of got seduced by the allure of a kind of a macho form of militancy where you want to fight cops. It's what kids do, boys especially.
Okay.
They like to prove themselves. Some of them play football. Some of them go off to war. I was a kid at 19 years old, and I wanted to prove myself. 19. So, or maybe 20 at that point. That level of militancy and violence was a very low level compared to the kind of militancy and violence that the United States was perpetrating in Vietnam. Our country was murdering maybe 3 to 5 million people that we murdered.
Right.
And secondly, it was a low level of violence compared to the kind of violence that we felt was necessary to overthrow the government. Now, that second level of violence, bombings and stuff like that, we figured that came several years later.
Okay, well, I'm talking with Mark Rudd. This is Bruce Birch, and this is All Things Reconsidered. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back for the second half of this interview. The president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now download off our website at progressive.org. Congressional Republicans really did themselves proud this week as they gouged $40 billion out of the social safety net. Happy holidays to you, too. Now, as a result of this bill that Dick Cheney rushed home from his torture tour to vote in favor of, Medicaid recipients will have to shell out much more for health care. Instead of paying $3 for each service or drug they receive, those who are at the poverty line may now face co-payments that amount to 10% of their medical bill. Anyone who's been to the doctor lately knows how much that can be. This will adversely affect 6 million children, since their parents will now have a strong incentive to skip out of Medicaid entirely and take their chances. Guess what happens then? More kids and parents get seriously ill and then go to the ER, where the cost to all of us mount. Hey, but for the Republicans, it's a way to boot the poor off the rolls and the disabled while they're at it. Some low-income disabled people will now have to wait up to a year to get their supplemental security income from the government. And people in the TANF program, the successor to welfare, will have to work extra hours to get the meager benefits the government's now offering. To top it all off, the Republicans cut funding even for child support, even for foster care. They stuffed every lump of coal they could find in the stockings of the poor at some Christmas present. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I
stay. You're listening to my dad, Bruce Birch, on All Things Reconsidered.
Hello, Mrs. Johnson. Let's see, before we close on your mortgage loan, I want to make sure you remember Mike.
Hello.
And as you know, he's African-American like you, so you can trust him.
And that's important, because here's the low monthly payment and interest rate you were promised, and here's where it triples. Plus, we buried a balloon payment in there, so you'll need another loan just to pay that off.
Another loan?
But we'll keep giving you loans.
Until we eventually take all the equity you had in your house, leaving you with absolutely nothing.
What? But don't worry, we're going to sell you credit life insurance. You don't really need it, but we sell it at 5 times the cost.
Which puts a ton of cash in our pockets.
Wait, whoa. Don't get up. You look nervous.
Ooh, we better hurry up and get you to sign, or if you don't, I can pretend to ruin your credit with one phone call.
Predatory lenders are never this easy to spot. Call us at 866-222-FAIR and protect yourself with the facts. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Fair Housing Alliance and the Ad Council.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Remember the election of 2000? Frightening. But we can all thank our lucky stock portfolios that when the shouting and those silly recounts were over, the Bush-Cheney team emerged with a clear 5-4 majority. Well, we don't want to go through that again. So you can bet your last $1 million that the next election won't be all messy. No dimpled ballots. No hanging chads. In fact, no paper at all. Thanks to our good friends at Diebold and their touchscreen voting machine, we can ensure that swing state swing our way. Just think, Chad will be just another country to liberate, and all Americans can look forward to 4 more wars. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaire!
All right, we're back. This is Bruce Birch, and this is All Things Reconsidered. And today I'm interviewing Mark Rudd, and Mark is a former one of the founders of the Weather Underground and former National Secretary of Students for a Democratic Society. And when we went to the break, we were just talking about the mobilization that Columbia SDS undertook when Dean Rusk, Secretary of State under LBJ, came to New York for a meeting of the Foreign Policy Association. Mark, I want to sort of get away from that a little bit and more into some of the activities that happened following the 1969 convention. After that convention, what did the organizational structure of the Weathermen / SDS look like?
After the 69 convention?
Yeah.
I want to just kind of fill in a little gap here before
okay.
I can get that. If you could hold that question.
Sure, absolutely.
A little bit. Because I don't want to give your listeners a wrong impression about SDS.
Okay.
Most of our work on almost all the campuses that had SDS chapters, and certainly at Columbia, most all our work was centered on the campus. And it was what's called organizing work.
Okay.
Since that, we saw as our goal the growth of the organization and the growth of the number of people mobilized against the war, the growth of the number of people who understand the nature of the war and act on it. So at Columbia, the main work we did was not street fighting. Excuse me, in New York, it was organizing on campus to educate people about how Columbia University was involved in the war and how Columbia University was a racist institution. That was the focus of our work, and this was what's really classical organizing work. And it took years of this kind of educational and outreach and talk and meetings and confrontations and demonstrations at the university to grow the movement. And that's what SDS was involved with.
Okay.
We were students at Columbia University. We had we felt we had a good, accurate understanding of the nature of the war.
Okay.
We felt we could be most effective against the war by talking to other students and getting them involved. And that's exactly what we did.
Okay.
Started with a small group of people in 1965, maybe 25, 30 at the most. And by 1968, the whole campus was on strike against the university's involvement and complicity with this horrible war and its racist expansion into the Harlem community. The point, though, is that we were organizers of a community. We saw ourselves as organizers.
Okay.
I'm stressing this point because I want to kind of plant the idea in young activists' minds that it's not just the activist work of going to demonstrations, but it's the growth of the movement that we have to be concerned with.
Okay.
And that's what we did.
So after you left Columbia, you were traveling around the country doing organizing work?
I was helping SDS chapters get organized, but I was also talking about the Columbia strike and about the reasons, what had happened, and also the reasons for it. And so I was giving a boost to the local chapters. I was a regional organizer in the New York region, primarily going to other chapters and helping them get organized. But I also did kind of speaking and public educational activities around the country. So yes, that's what I was, an organizer.
Okay. excuse me, in the documentary of Weather Underground, Todd Gitlin, who is a past was a past SDS national secretary.
Correct.
Accused the Weathermen of
writers of the founding document, the Port Huron Statement, 1962.
Okay. He accused the Weathermen of organizational piracy.
He's right.
Okay.
Right. We took over that organization and kind of ran it in a direction that guaranteed it was going to be destroyed. And he's right. I could even say it's stronger than that. I could say we did the work of the FBI.
Wow. Of course, at the time, that's not what your intention was, right?
No. Our intention was to make it into a revolutionary organization. It wasn't revolutionary enough. It didn't have as its strategy armed struggle to overthrow the government of the United States. It was a radical organization that was that legally demonstrated and legally educated people and organized against an illegal war. Big difference.
Yeah. You know, something that I found something that I found interesting in the documentary is that the filmmaker actually described you and Bernadine Dorn as being the Bonnie and Clyde of SDS.
I think that might have been a quote from somebody else.
No? Okay.
Because the filmmaker Sam Green wasn't a character in the movie.
Well, it was actually, I think, the voiceover, the announcer, the
narrator?
Yeah, the narrator.
I don't remember.
How did you, that's sort of in context, but how did you see yourself at that time?
Well, myself as a soldier.
Okay.
Who was ready to do whatever needed to be done. And if it was play a public role, a media spokesperson role, I would do that. Or if it was fighting a cop, I would do that. Or if it was going underground and not seeing my family ever again and risking my life, I would do that. I felt that we were in a war. We were on the side that wanted the end of this militaristic empire, and I was a soldier. I felt I was drafted to be a soldier, only my nation wasn't just the United States. My nation was the whole planet.
Okay. Well, I'm talking with Mark Rudd. This is Bruce Birch, and this is All Things Reconsidered. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Think careful.
All right, this is Bruce Birch, and we will be right back here in just a moment. But beforehand, if you want to call in with a phone call or two before the top of the hour, we're going to be taking a couple. Or take one, maybe, or two before the top of the 11 o'clock hour. And after that, we'll take some more. But we're going to go ahead and take a break here real quick. If you'd like to call in at this time, it would be a great time to do it. The telephone number is 336-856-2855. That's 336-856-2855. You can also send us an email. allthings@allthingsreconsidered.org. And you can also join us in the Tom Hartman chat room, thomhartmann.com. Click live chat and it'll take you right into that chat room. We'll be right back.
Think carefully. Do you remember what you had for breakfast this morning? Do you remember where you're supposed to be this afternoon? Do you remember the first question? Our children, your child, may not. Because every day the chances of becoming a victim of mercury poisoning increase. Mercury poisoning may cause neurological damage that impairs learning, language development, vision, and memory. And mercury itself has become part of our everyday lives, absorbed by certain fish, taken into our bodies, and passed on to our children like a common cold. But you can stop this. Log on to earthshare.org and find out how. Will you remember that? A public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. In his radio address over the weekend, Mr. Bush not only admitted to breaking the law by authorizing government agencies to eavesdrop on citizens in secret and without a warrant, but angrily vowed to continue it, even though the very idea of it goes against everything America theoretically stands for. Of course, it's been pretty obvious for a long time that Mr. Bush and his allies have nothing but disdain for the democratic process. As far as these people are concerned, they are the only people in the world, or at least the only ones that matter. The Constitution to them is just another annoying obstacle to overcome. So what they're doing, while reprehensible, is at least understandable. My question is, what will it finally take to convince those supporters of Mr. Bush who aren't directly profiting from the events of the last 5 years that this administration is really a greater threat to their freedoms than all the Osamas and Saddam Husseins combined? There may be a method to all this madness, but it's still madness. It's madness to abuse power like this because it eventually backfires, and it's madness to continue to support people who do things like this because sooner or later they'll find an excuse to go after you, too. If you're a working person voting Republican, don't flatter yourself to think that you'll be part of the in crowd. You won't, you never will be, and the truth is, you're better off for it. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now download off our website at progressive.org. The withdrawal of U.S. troops is finally beginning, and I cheer every time a single U.S. soldier returns unharmed. But let's not fool ourselves here. George Bush has no intention of bringing all or even most of the troops home before he leaves office. He's had a baseline of 138,000 troops in Iraq for the last year or so, with the number rising to about 165,000 in the lead-up to the elections. So it was always in the works to draw back down, and now Rumsfeld is going to go 5,000 lower than that, which will still leave 133,000 U.S. troops in Iraq, for comparison purposes. And I know the Bush administration wants us all to have amnesia. The Pentagon was saying the number of U.S. troops in Iraq would be 30,000 by December. By December of 2003, they were off only a little bit. And just listen to Bush's rhetoric in his propaganda offensive over the last month, which has amazingly upped his poll numbers. He talks of complete victory, and in his ever-simplistic formulations, he poses another either-or. It's no longer you're either with us or you're with the terrorists. Now it's you're either for victory or you're for defeat. Well, victory isn't around the corner, and the insurgency, don't tell Cheney, isn't in its last throes. We've lost 2,155 soldiers so far in Iraq. By next Christmas, that number may be close to 3,000. Rumsfeld's in Iraq right now. He should stay there. Bring everybody else home. I'm Matt Rothschild. That's how I see it.
Hello, anybody home? Special delivery.
Out now.
Registered mail, you're going to have to sign for this, buddy.
Out now.
Come on, I know you're in there.
I don't want to get drafted, I don't want to go. I don't want to get drafted. I don't want to get drafted, I don't want to go. I don't want to get drafted, no, no, no.
All right, this is Bruce Birch back with you, All Things Reconsidered. That was our good old pal, Frank Zappa, complaining about not wanting to get drafted. I think that was circa 1972 or 3 or something like that. But Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention, check them out if you don't know anything about them. That interview that you just heard was myself and Mark Rudd. And Mark was a member of the Weather Underground and SDS back in the day. He is now a professor of mathematics out in New Mexico. And you'll hear the second half of that interview next week. On January the 1st, we will also be running a two-hour show. Tonight, we're going to go 2 hours, and it looks like we may have to fill some time with me talking for another hour, but maybe somebody will give me a call sometime soon. You can reach us if you want to call into the show. You can do so by calling 336-856-2855. That's 336-856-BULL, B-U-L-L. I just thought that was interesting. I looked that up a few minutes ago and realized that it does indeed say bull. So, but just to bring you back up to speed on some other stuff, on the break, I found out something that apparently happened over the last few, or this is going to be in tomorrow's Washington Post. This is by Howard Kurtz. That's why I love this time of the night, by the way, is that you always get to have, especially on a Monday, you always get to have the stories this time of night that are going to be in tomorrow's paper. So it's like, you know, you got a direct line to what's going to be happening or what the big news for tomorrow before anybody else has a chance to digest it. But apparently, and we already knew this, President Bush summoned Arthur Sulzberger and Philip Taubman to the Oval Office to talk about the eavesdropping story that James Risen and Eric Lichtbaugh broke in the New York Times last week. But apparently, they're not the only ones. The executive editors of the Washington Post have also been invited to the Oval Office to talk about stories that just don't need to get out there. You know, they're trying to, you know, Porter Goss, John Negroponte, you know, the guy who likes everywhere he shows up, killing squads are close behind him, allegedly. You know, all these folks are sitting down with these news people and saying, you know, you don't need to be running these stories. These stories are damaging to us. How dare you tell, you know, the truth? How dare, you know, what is wrong with you people? All of a sudden you're not our lapdogs anymore, you know? So it's really interesting. They're actually pulling them into the Oval Office to have serious conversations about these issues. When senior, this is just an excerpt from this particular article. When senior administration officials raised national security questions about details in Dana Priest's story during her reporting, at their request, we met with them on more than one occasion. Leonard Downey, who is the Washington Post executive editor, says, the meetings were off the record for the purpose of discussing national security issues in her story. At least one of the meetings involved John Negroponte, the Director of National Intelligence, and CIA Director Porter Goss. I think it's kind of interesting. That's probably the only time those two sit down in the room together, you know, to talk about actual stuff that needs to be talked about. So there that story is. You know, we can look forward to more high-level meetings with newspaper publishers. Let me tell you something. I will make a solemn promise to you, my listeners. If I'm ever invited to the White House and I'm asked to not talk about certain things, I promise you that I will, number one, turn down the meeting, and that I will, number two, report to you that I was asked. Okay? There's transparency. Okay? There's some integrity for you. Okay? I promise you that. We're right up at the top of the hour. It's about 10:59. And we're going to go, there's so many breaks. We're going to go to another break real quick. If you'd like to call us, please do so. 336-856-2855, 336-856-2855. We'll be taking calls through the next hour, and, you know, depending on how well the show goes, we'll, you know, cut it off at 12 or keep going. Who knows? I know toward the last part of that hour, we're probably going to do some unscreened calls. So basically, you know, I'll answer you on the air. So just, you know, if you'd like to call in, please do so. You can also send an email to allthings@allthingsreconsidered.org. Or you can come to our chat room, tomhartman.com. Click on the live chat button, and that'll shoot you right into there. Again, my name is Bruce Birch, and we're glad to have you aboard the All Things Reconsidered train. And I'm trying to get this other thing coming up here.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. Hey, does anyone remember New Orleans? It wasn't that long ago when Hurricane Katrina devastated the Big Easy and much of the Gulf Coast, and President Bush vowed to rebuild it. As usual, though, what he said wasn't exactly what he meant. What he really meant was that the city would be rebuilt, but only for rich white people. It's the kind of redistricting that, as one Republican congressman proclaimed, only God could have allowed. According to an editorial in the New York Times, the Small Business Administration, which is responsible for allocating funds to the devastated region, has processed only 92,000 of the 276,000 home loan applications it has received. And of that 92,000, less than 17,000 have been approved. For those of you keeping score, that's about 18%. The other 82% were turned down because their credit rating was shot or they didn't earn enough money. Most working people live paycheck to paycheck, and sometimes even a small expense can be devastating. In this case, these are people who lost their homes or, worse, everything they had due to a combination of incompetence or apathy from the federal government. To be sure, there's plenty of money to fix the levees, clean up New Orleans properly, and get people back in their homes. The Republicans have given away far more in tax cuts for the very rich than the cost for saving New Orleans. I suppose they assume that the money will somehow trickle down to those who lost their homes. But as people who live on the bottom know, there's only one thing that rolls downhill. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
Head on.
He's back.
Yes, I am.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Your computer is your radio. No static, no low power signal. It's easy. Bob Kincaid, West Virginia's number one liberal talker, is back on the air. Bigger, badder, and better than ever. Head on with Bob Kincaid, just like you remember it. Feisty, ferocious, and foremost, fact-based. No right-wing spin, no falafel, no oxycontin. Just a nightly confrontation with the facts, the issues of the day. Head on. Listen live every night.
Listen live every night. HeadOnRadio.com.
Click on air every weeknight from 7:06 to 10 p.m. Then call 877-443-2366. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. It's easy.
It's talk radio for the rest of us.
Monday through Friday nights, 7 to 10.
Head on.
Colors that you fly, love just one nation, and the whole world we divide. You say you're sorry, there is no other choice. God bless the people now. Cannot raise their voice. We can chase down all our enemies, bring them to their knees. We can bomb the world to pieces, but we can't bomb it into peace. Whoa. Bring them to
Okay, this is Bruce Birch back with you for All Things Reconsidered. It's 8 minutes past the hour, and my good friend Spike, who is visiting his family in Toby Hanna, PA, is going to be joining us later on the show, he says, anyway. Now he has to. Okay. And now on to our I was sitting here thinking about some stuff on the break and looking at some various articles, and one of the things that I dug up is again, you know, it's like all of these people are coming out and they're talking about this spying thing that's been going on, and I got to tell you what makes me most upset about it, you know, not that you asked, but I will anyway. You can call me and ask if you'd like. 336-856-2855. If you'd like to get on the air, please do so. Give me a call. But I'm going to tell you that, you know, what upsets me the most about the whole spying thing is that, you know, we didn't hear about this from our phone companies that we're paying money to use their services with a reasonable expectation of privacy. We didn't hear about this from our legislators, who apparently some of them heard in passing that this might be going on, such as Jay Rockefeller. We didn't hear about this from, you know, the people who are supposed to be protecting our civil liberties, you know, the administration, you know, supposed to be, I said. How we heard about this was a leaked story that had been held on to for over a year. This story, the New York Times sat on this story for a year before finally telling us, you know, that that there was a problem, that stuff was going on. And you know, and I don't know, am I the only one who is a little frustrated about that? I mean, I could be wrong here. I'm thinking that maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm the only one that cares about civil liberties. Maybe I'm the only one that seems to give a damn that, you know, that I want a reasonable expectation of privacy. Now, when I get on the air and I talk to you guys like this, I don't expect to have any privacy. I expect tomorrow to get my normal every Monday morning hit on my website from somebody based in Washington, D.C., and I see it every week like clockwork about 9 o'clock in the morning. Somebody, you know, I get the hit on my website. Somebody downloads the previous night's show. Now, that could be very well someone at the DNC. It could be someone, who knows, at the Pentagon. It could be someone down in McLean, Virginia. I don't know. You know? Okay? But when I do this over the air, I expect there to be... This is out in the public domain. Anybody can download it. So I don't care, right? But when I get on the telephone and I have a conversation with my mother, perhaps about some medical issue that's going on in her life or in my life, you know, I'd hate for that to become on a recording somewhere because I said the word ricin. Oh, shit. Bad word. And I don't have a cough button either. You know, because I said the word, you know, I was listening to my friend Bob Kincaid the other night, and he was doing some clever little drops in the show where he was saying, you know, when we're talking about things like this ricin, we want to make sure that we're not mentioning words that are like anthrax that might come up in the conversation that someone could record ricin that might trigger off something that could happen down the road, yeah, blah, blah, blah. I just thought that was really amusing because I think that's what they're doing. You know, apparently this software that's being used in the analysis of the phone calls that they're recording picks up some you know certain voice patterns which you know that I'm sure are programmed in there for people to mention nuclear bombs and things like that. So, but I really have a problem with it. And I think that the you know as I said the biggest problem isn't that our phone company didn't tell us. I mean, they don't give a crap about us. But it's that those people that are supposed to be the watchdog of our nation held on to the story for such a long period of time, you know, that and from what we understand, only released it because there was a book about to come out on it. You know, it makes no sense to me. It makes no sense to me. Anyway, as I was saying, now Colin Powell is coming out on supporting government eavesdropping to prevent terrorism. He decided to say today. I really don't give a crap what Colin Powell says at this point. You know, he gave his farewell speech as a Secretary of State on January the 19th, 2005. And as far as I'm concerned, he needs to go to the farm, play with the dogs, or do something. If you want, you know, if you want to talk about this eavesdropping thing, please do give me a call. 336-856-2855. That's 336-856-2855. Powell said today that when he was in the cabinet, he was not told that President Bush authorized a warrantless National Security Agency surveillance operation after the September 11, 2001 attacks. But he sees absolutely nothing wrong with the president authorizing these kinds of actions to protect the nation. Okay, now, am I the only one, again, I'm wondering, am I the only one that has a problem with the president authorizing something to protect our civil liberties that actually violates our civil liberties? You know, I mean, is there a little bit of a strange, you know, meme there? I mean, you know, does it outrage me? Absolutely it does. You know, what we're seeing is a consistent eroding of all that government used to stand for. Now, I'm not one of those people that is a hate government person, or I'm not a hate America first. I'm not a hate this or hate that. What I am, I believe, is a patriot. What I am, I believe, is someone who says, okay, this is not, absolutely not acceptable. To defend our nation and to take everything that we stand for and to trounce it and to stomp on it, you know, in the name of national security, to me, is just ridiculous and completely wrong. I was in Virginia yesterday. My folks live up in Virginia, and I was up there yesterday, and I sat down, and you know, my mother and I, thank God she's not a Republican, because if she were a Republican, I probably would spend less time with her. My mother is not a Republican. My father is a recovering Republican. He and I sat down before the election in 2004, and we had a come to Jesus talk. And in this talk, that's a southern phrase for saying, okay, Pop, you know, you tell me really what you really think about this, and let's see what the truth is. And I did every argument he had, I had a counter argument, and he eventually ended up dropping his Republican membership, and now he cuts their, or he mails their stuff back to them, says, you know, take me off your list, which is cool. You know, I'm really glad about that. But I was up there yesterday, and we sat down, and we were talking about some stuff, and my mom is now trying to access this Medicare thing, this Medicare D, which is apparently is a prescription program. And so she goes, you know, they're saying that you know, that she goes and she talks with the insurance guy about this Medicare. There's a point to this. I'll get there in a second. So he goes, you know, she goes to this website. This guy steers her to a website, this insurance agent. You know, no one can answer her questions. So they say, go to Medicare.gov and click on Compare Plans. And if you click on Compare Plans, then you'll be able to see all these different plans. Well, my mother goes to the website. You know, she's in her 70s. She goes to the website. Fairly astute for, you know, a lady who's 70 years old. She has her doctorate, chemistry and physics, but very, very intelligent lady. Highly intelligent lady. So she goes to this website, and even she, you know, she spent, I guess she told me something like 20 or 30 minutes trying to negotiate this thing to find out where in the heck she could, you know, compare these plans. And once she got in the middle of it, she realized that what had happened was, it looks like, and I'm going to go visit this site later, I didn't get a chance to today, but it looked like that what had happened is, apparently, Medicare has allowed the privatization of their website in much the same way that FEMA did. When FEMA put up links to Operation Blessing or whatever it was, Pat Robertson's privatization rescue squad Red Cross thing back right at Katrina, and they caught so much flack for it that they pulled it down. Well, apparently Medicare is doing some of the same thing with insurance companies. My mother did a comparison. She finally got to the place where she could do it and found that there were 47 insurance companies that were willing to cover her and the medication that she's taking. And apparently the medication she's taking is pretty expensive, which makes me wonder what the payoff is that 47 insurance companies would be willing to cover someone who's taking expensive medication. Again, the excesses of government. So we had a good talk about that. And I'm reading in the chat room. I guess I need to really put this across about I really need to put this across about the Blue and Mo, Blue in Missouri, who's in the chat room, was talking about the Homeland Security thing, that we need to quit saying Homeland. And I am absolutely in favor of that. We need to move away from the Homeland meme and get on into something else. I don't know what we want to call it, but it looks like we've got Spike up on the radio here. If you'll give us 1 second. Spike, you there?
Yeah.
Hey,
can you hear me?
Yeah, absolutely. How are you doing this evening?
Hey, Gonzo greetings there.
Gonzo greetings to you, man.
I'm doing all right.
What's on your mind?
You just have to bear with me. You're kind of a little low on my end here.
Okay.
What isn't on my mind half the time? There's a few things. Just to update everyone on the city of Easton, they proposed, the mayor tried to get the police chief of the crime-riddled Allentown to replace the police chief in Easton, which is in the middle of an investigation of one cop killing another controversy, and the kibosh was put on it because the new chief wanted the city to pay for him to have a personal car at the taxpayer's expense. And so this is the first thing that really people have turned on the mayor about, finally. Although I didn't do a bad job leading up to that, but I just figured everyone would enjoy that when the city's in the middle of an economic crisis and there's all these corruption in the police department, the mayor's pushing for some guy who wants us to pay for his personal car.
Wow.
You know, just typical America wasteland there. The other big thing is the issue with wiretapping and people who have been vocal against this administration in the war. Everyone's already mentioned in the liberal stuff. I'm wondering on the right, there was a little, kind of fringe, but decently sized group of conservatives who opposed going into Iraq. And, the Constitution Party, had a presidential candidate who was in more states than Nader. And I'm wondering, if these people also ended up a subject of the wiretap issue. No one's talked about that yet.
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
Spike, Chuck Hagel, I know, but a lot of these guys, they were actually for the war to begin with. And after the war, or against the war, once it looked like things were starting to go tough. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And then, you get some guys, too, that I suspect, that, like Buchanan's probably been on the enemy list of anyone by the name of Bush for about 15 years now.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you get certain people like that who've been watching. And ironically, he'll probably support the administration on the wiretap issue. But maybe not, because there are a lot of conservatives on that side who are very upset about the Patriot Act. Strangely enough, of all people, I remember seeing Alan Keyes on MSNBC speaking against the Patriot Act a few years ago. I don't think you can get more far to the right than maybe Hitler past Alan Keyes. I'm not too sure. He's about as swiny as they come in the Republican Party.
Yeah, well, Alan Keyes is the African-American guy who hates African-Americans, right?
Yeah. And he has the lesbian daughter and he hates gays.
He's pretty much an equal opportunity hater.
Yeah. Well, I guess you can't call him racist. He just hates everyone equally. So, you know, I guess he has that warped sense on the world. But I do like that he lost as a carpetbagger to Obama that time, considering he criticized Clinton for doing the same thing, even though she was too.
Right.
You know, but I mean, he ran into the glass house and threw 10 rocks.
So Spike, tell me, what's your own personal thoughts on the fact that you could have possibly been the subject of wiretapping?
I'm not surprised. I'm not pleased, but in a way, I'm not surprised. I mean, I remember, you know, back about 2002, 2003, from hearing stuff from, I went to an ACLU conference, Harrisburg, you know, just stuff like Nat Hentoff or even Ralph Nader that they had written about that they could do, because no one really ever explained it to us. And once I started to hear it, I kind of had a suspicion I was kind of becoming a bad guy, but this is a country founded on you believe what's right and what's good for the people, and end up being the bad guy for that, then so be it. You know, I mean, in reality, everyone in this country needs to have regrettably one life to give for this country. And
Nathan Hale.
Certainly, if I have to be the bad guy and break the law and pay the ridiculous warped consequences that these deviants in charge want to put on us, then, you know, I'll do that to stand up for freedom. So, in a way, I'm almost hoping I'm on the enemy's list somewhere, because it would certainly make me feel good about what I'm doing.
Well, I think you probably would be in good company. You know, based on this president, you probably would be in great company.
Yeah. I suspect even people like Tom Hartman, who's about as calm and, you know, he doesn't really slam anyone. I'm sure he's probably on the list there just for being critical.
Sure.
I mean, you know, I'm not even talking to, you know, over the top people out there. I mean, there's some legitimate people who are probably on the enemy's list. And God knows what they've probably heard me say over the years, especially at times under the influence and the subject of what the White House has done coming up. But,
well, you know, I had another, just one more question before we go, you know, or unless you, you know, we can do this all night, Spike, you know. But the other question that I wanted to ask you, just, you know, the other thing that came out right before the wiretapping thing really sort of got big was that apparently, you know, this administration has been surveilling groups that are, I mean, even the American Friends Service Committee.
Yeah, the Girl Scouts, I heard on, I think, the Young Turks, they said they read the Girl Scouts group was a group that they had actually monitored.
Oh, my goodness. Now, see, I didn't even hear that. The Girl Scouts?
Yeah. I don't know how true, legit that one is, but if that's true, I mean, that's beyond over Nixon the top. I mean,
were those hash cookies?
I really don't know what the hell the Girl Scouts, of all people, could be doing to ruin this country other than getting us fat every February.
You know, maybe for fructose consumption or something. I don't know.
Those groups, the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, they're really conservative groups for the most part.
I would think so.
Still.
Yeah.
Not necessarily that bad stuff, but I mean, I really don't see how the Girl Scouts would be a radical group, but with this dimwit, I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, maybe because they promote education, and that irritates him because he thinks he's the edumacation leader. I'm not sure.
You know, it makes me wonder that at some point, when does it happen that that this president, you know, pulls a Dick Nixon on us and everyone is an enemy?
Well, he might be. Sadly, he could become worse than Nixon. I mean, because at least Nixon had intelligence. This guy, he has the rage of Nixon and no brains to go with. I mean, Nixon was an evil nut.
Right.
Bush is just a plain stupid one. I mean, it's sad to say, but, you know, everyone likes to compare him to Hitler. Hey, you know, at least Hitler was behind the Volkswagen Beetle and the highway system. I mean, this idiot can't even eat a pretzel watching football without doing something wrong.
I know. You know what? You know why Hitler put the engine in the back, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was more valuable than the people.
Yeah, well, yeah, safety-wise, they needed to come up with a stronger reinforcement in the front. But, I mean, if this guy designed a car, it would come with no lug nuts and the wheels would fall off leaving the showroom.
Well, you know, and Spike, I just, you know, I mean, I'm there with you. I don't know, I guess I'm just not, you know, on the one hand, I think that he absolutely is not an intelligent person, but on the other hand, I also think that really, you know, the wheels or the motor that's driving this administration and driving their policies is not him per se.
Yeah, no, it's definitely Dirty Dick, the vice president.
Yeah,
I mean, anyone who talks out of the side of their mouth 24/7 definitely probably a good reason they're stuck in that mode. And yeah, certainly the Cheney, the Rumsfeld. I mean, Rumsfeld, the guy who armed Saddam Hussein, which I'll never understand how he's not on trial right now in Baghdad with Saddam, considering he is the person who gave the ability to Saddam to do those types of heinous acts.
It made me wonder if he visited Saddam while he was there.
Well, I wouldn't doubt that there's something going on with our government and these vanishing lawyers. You notice Ramsey Clark's the one that doesn't vanish.
Right.
That would be messy.
Yes.
American citizen. But people who aren't American citizens, they just keep vanishing like it's going out of style. You know, the one thing all this, what this government has made, kind of made me glad is that, in a way, the conservatives have given us the right to bear arms, because, not that I would shoot up an invasion, but I know I'd rather go the Hemingway route if they were going to start locking everyone up in this country who opposed them.
The Hemingway route?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, before I get you off the line, though, I have a question for you.
All right.
And this is about Hunter S. Thompson.
Okay.
I know that you are, you know, obviously you're a fan of his, but what's the story going around about the story surrounding his death?
I heard speculation, but I don't necessarily believe it. He had a lot of health problems leading in those late 60s. He had a hip replacement. He had a lot of ailments starting to catch up with him. He lived quite a hard life for quite a long time.
Yes, he did.
And he was really starting to almost age rapidly in his late 60s, you know, mid-60s, and very depressed. I think he had a lot of problems over the years also with depression. And he decided that it would be better to just go the way he did, slow and suffering, kind of in a way. The went very well with this Terry Schiavo case. It's kind of funny, no one ever kind of made the two connections. Someone might want to go with those two cases.
Sure.
And he was always a huge admirer of Hemingway, and certainly, I mean, Hemingway, you know, referencing that just a little earlier, he certainly had a similar manner in leaving. And sometimes I that's what I think, you know, if you have to choose between pain and suffering or just going like that, I would go that route. I wouldn't recommend it. It's not like something I think about or I'm planning on doing, but certainly, I mean, if that's what I say, you know, if I had to come down to either being interrogated like they did in Iraq or being dead, I would just go with the dead route.
Sure.
Honest with you, because I can only imagine the mental horrors that people would suffer after an experience like that.
Sure. And they launched him out of a rocket, is that right?
Yeah.
What a great way to go, eh?
Yeah, that was an ongoing thing. He always had some crazy ideas, and the one he went with maybe the longest was that they put his ashes in a gonzo shape, the gonzo fist of gonzo journals and canon, and fire. There's a guy who has a documentary all about just his funeral.
Oh, really? Wow. We might have to try to get him on for an interview at some point.
Yeah, well, he also did Breakfast with Hunter, which is a documentary on Thompson. He followed Thompson for a couple of years in the 90s. And that's almost a comical documentary.
We'll have to check that out.
Yeah, just breakfastwithhunter.com, I think, is what it is. It's a one of a kind documentary once you watch it. And the best of all is it's also a lot when Johnny Depp was studying Thompson to do him in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and it's really interesting to see the two together doing things together all the time, and you know, just seeing Depp basically become Thompson, and makes that performance so much better, because you even get to hear some of the friends of Thompson say, my God, I mean, look at these two. They're like clones out there. So, I mean, but yeah, that's certainly a way to go. certainly have to write a lot of good books and a lot of great articles, and best political writings, satire-wise, and facts-wise a little bit. Definitely like Campaign Trail 72 and those things from him.
Okay. Well, Spike, thanks for calling, man.
Hey, no problem.
And maybe we'll next week we're going to do a similar call-in thing. So if you gather up information throughout the next week, call in again.
Okay, no problem.
All right, man.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks. Bye. And that was Spike calling in on our line, and we're going to go to a break real quick. We'll be back in just a few minutes. This is Bruce Burch. You're listening to All Things Reconsidered. You can call in if you'd like to call in and be a part of our program, 336-856-2855. You can email us allthings@allthingsreconsidered.org, and you can also come to us, come and chat in the Tom Hartman chat room, THOM. Hartman with two N's .com. Click on live chat. We'll be back in just one moment.
Hi, you've reached the Johnsons. We're not available to take your call. If you're calling about the apartment for rent, please leave your name and number after the beep, and someone will get back to you.
Hi, my name is Sanjay Rana. I would like to make an appointment to see the apartment.
Oh, hi, this is Robin DiPaola, and I'm calling about the apartment. Please give me a call back at 2.
Hi, hello. This is Rafael Paredes. Please call me back at 718.
This is Jeannie Chu. I'd like to talk to you about the apartment. If you can, please call me back.
Hello, my name's Clayton Anderson. I'm calling about the ad in the Sunday paper.
Oh, hello. This is Mrs. Johnson. You must be calling about the apartment.
I am. Is it still available?
Well, you're the first person to call about it. Are you available?
Housing discrimination of all kinds is illegal in the U.S. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Thurston, where did you suddenly get that walkie-talkie?
I've had it all along, my dove. You see, the statute of limitations on my creative accounting is up. Time to end this tropical charade and return to our billions.
Oh, do we have to go back? It's so cozy here on the island.
My dear, don't you listen to the coconut radio? It's the best time ever to be a billionaire in America. More than half of the last tax cut went to the wealthiest 5%.
But the voters will never allow that kind of thing.
That's what's so marvelous, lovey. The middle class believes they're going to be billionaires someday.
Well, anything's possible in America.
Oh, your naivete is so charming. My love. The fact is, the gap between them and us is getting wider all the time. W's our boy.
Bush Economics. More than just a 3-hour tour. Paid for by BillionairesForBush.com.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now download off our website at progressive.org. When the history of the Bush administration is finally written, there'll be one character who will cast a long shadow over the entry. That character, of course, is Dick Cheney. Behind every dictatorial step by Bush lies Cheney. He was the prime mover behind the detention policies. He was the prime mover behind the torture policies and their prime defender to this day. It was Cheney who pushed the Iraq War, hyped the WMD, and urged the flouting of the UN. It was Cheney who pushed the NSA to spy on Americans. It was Cheney who briefed a tiny group in Congress on it. And it is Cheney who supplies the rationale for these profoundly menacing policies. Unlike Bush and Gonzalez, Cheney seems less concerned about couching the NSA spying in legal garments. It's naked power to him, so he just asserts the necessity of an unchecked president. While winging his way back from Asia, Cheney told reporters, "I believe in a strong, robust executive authority, and I think that the world we live in demands it." Then, in typical Cheney fashion, he pulled a number right out of his ear and said, with no evidence to back him up, that this spying has saved thousands of lives. This man is a modern-day Machiavelli, a smirking Iago, and he represents a grave danger to our democracy. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Thanks for listening to my dad, Bruce Birch, on All Things Reconsidered. If you're not careful, you might be labeled an enemy combatant.
This is Bruce Birch. I'm back with you on All Things Reconsidered. That was a little bit of Rush that you heard there. Some Rush tunes, Fly By Night. I'm kind of seeing myself there as a fly by night this evening. Again, if you'd like to get in touch with us and you want to get on the radio program, you can do so by calling 336-856-2855. That's 336-856-2855. We just had Spike from Toby Hanna, PA, and we talked about a number of different things, not the least of which was Hunter S. Thompson. What a guy. What a guy. I did want to talk a little bit about, since it is Christmas Day, you know, I figured maybe, you know, I could bring this up because the every year there's some magazine or some news outlet, you know, some, you know, newspaper or television station or somebody, you know, commissions a study on how many people believe in God. And this year, it's Science Daily. And you can get to this story by going to sciencedaily.com. Wouldn't you believe if, you know, if I told you that this story was broken or by United Press International, would anybody register that? I'm asking this mainly because, or just to sort of bring up the point that the UPI, United Press International, which used to be similar to the AP, the Associated Press, is owned by the Reverend Sun Myung Moon. Okay, so the UPI, which broke this story, is owned by Mr. Mooney himself. Anyway, let me just read you this, just to get your reaction on it. An overwhelming majority of U.S. residents believes in God, miracles, and life after death, results of a poll reported Sunday indicate. The Harris poll of 889 adults found 82% believe in God, 73% believe in miracles, 70% believe there is life after death, and my own personal favorite, no, I'm not going to add that. This is reported by the Washington Times, which also is owned by Moon. In addition, 70% said heaven exists, and 70% also cited Jesus as the Son of God. 6 out of 10 said there is a devil, and hell exists as well, the poll revealed. What may be more surprising, is that significant minorities believe in ghosts, UFOs, witches, astrology, and in reincarnation, Harris reported. Only 21% said they were once another person, 25% believed in astrology, 28% said that witches exist, and 34% said UFOs were real. The poll was taken November 15th through the 22nd, has a margin of error of 3 percentage points. I'm thinking 15th through 22nd, the 15th, let's look up that date. I wonder if that was a Sunday. Perhaps. Well, that's straight out of the Mooney Times, just to, you know, give you the obligatory God story for the week. No, but you know, I totally realize that there are many, many people out there who are firm believers in a God, and that's fantastic. You know, whatever anyone personally believes in is a good thing, and if it helps them, then I'm totally with that. So I'm not, like, I didn't cite this story to try to belittle anyone's religion or spirituality. I just thought I would pass it along, as long as we're, you know, doing stories like that. You still have about 15 minutes if you'd like to get in on our show. You can call us 336-856-2855. You can send an email to allthings@allthingsreconsidered.org. And also, you can meet us in the Tom Hartman chat room, where we are meeting and talking about various political stuff. Tom does a wonderful job of helping us with providing that chat room for progressives to talk and to interact. Just a real quick heads up. This is out of Media Matters. You can reach this website by going to mediamatters.org. Chris Matthews has been named the 2005 Miss Informer of the Year. And this is out of this is right off of their website. Since our launch in May 2004, Media Matters for America has monitored, analyzed, and corrected conservative misinformation in the media wherever and whenever we find it. As you may remember, last year our staff conducted an extensive review of all the misinformation we identified and corrected in the early days in order to name the first annual Misinformer of the Year. And guess who got that? That was none other than Bill O'Reilly. O'Reilly graciously accepted the award on Fox News' The O'Reilly Factor. Well, this year it's Chris Matthews, and let me just read you some of the excerpts that they were talking about that actually that they were able to give this to him for. Chris says, "Chris loves George." Part one. Bush. This is his quote. "Bush sometimes glimmers with sunny nobility." On MSNBC's Hardball, during a discussion with Washington Times editorial page editor Tony Blankley of the effects on President Bush and his administration of the investigation into the leak of the name of CIA operative Valerie Plame, Matthews said, "Sometimes it glimmers with this man, our president, that kind of sunny nobility." Just makes you just get all warm and fuzzy inside, doesn't it? Oh, here's another one. Chris Loves George. And this is Chris Loves George, Part 4. "Bush belongs on Mount Rushmore." Oh, my gosh. So George, if you're listening tonight, you know, I'm pretty sure you're not listening tonight. But if you are listening tonight, you know, I suggest that you give Chris Matthews a phone call and perhaps even ask him out on a date. You know, I'm sure you guys could go and have coffee and who knows, you know, maybe you can invite Jeff Gannon along. And you know, it could be a real, you know, a real suck fest. Anyway, so Chris Matthews has been bestowed the honor of the MediaMatters.org's 2005 Miss Informer of the Year. So look forward to this week and some press behind that one. Media Matters also collects on their website as well is the most outrageous statements of 2005. And I think this is really hilarious. You know, so if you again, you can go to mediamatters.org to get this information. But, you know, some of these are hilarious. Some of these are not. You know, some of the things that some of these people say are just, you just can't believe that this actually came out of somebody's mouth who was on the air talking to millions of people, you know, and wasn't arrested afterwards for, you know, inciting, you know, for hate speech or for creating a riot. Our good friend Rush Limbaugh, I wish I had some of that audio of Rush, you know, acting like a complete moron. Rush Doper Baby Limbaugh says, "Feminism was established so as to allow unattractive women easier access to the mainstream of society." Oh my gosh. Here's Rush again on the kidnapping of the peace activists in Iraq. "I'm telling you folks, there's part of me that likes this." Gosh, that was almost, it almost sounded like him. Ann Coulter, most outrageous statement of 2005. She says, "Bill Clinton was a very good rapist." I'm getting a little fed up with hearing about, oh, civilian casualties. I think we ought to nuke North Korea right now just to give the rest of the world a warning. You know, Tucker Carlson bashing our friends to the north. He says, Canada is a sweet country. It is like your retarded cousin that you see at Thanksgiving and sort of pat him on the head. You know, he's nice, but you don't take him seriously. That's Canada, he says. American Family Association President Tim Wildman says about liberals, they don't have the kind of family responsibilities most people have, and certainly not church responsibilities. Neil Bortz. Now this guy, this Neil Bortz guy, he's a real sick bastard, this guy. Here's what he says about on Tookie Williams, the execution there. He says, there will be riots in South Central Los Angeles and elsewhere. The rioting, of course, will lead to wide-scale looting. There are a lot of aspiring rappers and NBA superstars who could really use a nice flat-screen television right now. Gotta love that guy. And this is the same guy that said, suggesting that a victim of Hurricane Katrina housed in an Atlanta hotel consider prostitution. He says, I dare say she could walk out of that hotel and walk 100 yards in either direction on Fulton Industrial Boulevard here in Atlanta and have a job. What's that? Well, you know what? Now that you mention it, if that's the only way she can take care of herself, it sure beats the hell out of sucking off the taxpayers. This was on his show. Okay, I'm getting a little pissed off here. You know, the right and some of the stuff that they do and some of the stuff they say is just amazing to me. We are getting up towards the top of the hour, and we're not going to take a break until the end of the show. But I did want to really briefly wish everyone who has listened to this program over the last 4 or 5 months the very, very, very best. And you know, I know it's a little bit late to wish you happy holidays, or maybe it's not. Maybe we're in the middle of a holiday today, and we'll have another one next week. But I really would like to just sort of, over the next 10 minutes, reflect a little bit on why I even bothered to try to do this radio show. Because you know what? It's not all about raising Cain about the right wing, even though they give us plenty of material to do that with. You know, it's not all about, fighting the powers that be because they're sick and all they do is do stuff that maintains their power structure. It's not all about, you know, being a member of the loyal opposition. You know, a lot of why I do what I'm doing is because I really do care about America, and I really do care about what I was raised to believe about this nation. You know, I was raised to believe that this nation was the beacon of light in the world. I was raised to believe that this nation was the model of freedom, that you know, people longed to come here, that people around the world, you know, emigrated to America to be free and to be able to express themselves and to be a part of something that's larger and greater and bigger and better. There are thousands, millions of immigrants that have come to our country looking for a better way of life and have found it. I was raised to believe, you know, that in this nation, that the very thing that sets us apart from all the other nations of the world is the fact that we have a government that is of, by, and for the people. What I've come to realize over the last year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, is that someone duped me. You know, someone led me down the garden path, and then got me right up to the edge of the cliff, and that, you know, and I'm looking over the precipice and I'm going, what happened to this country? What happened, you know, to our democracy? you know, democracy missing. Maybe we need to like make up some flyers with a picture of America on it and say democracy missing and start hanging them up in grocery stores, you know, like your dog or your cat's missing or whatever. Put them on the side, you know, democracy missing on the side of a milk carton. America missing. You know, but the spirit of this season, is to me right now, you know, and what I'm sharing with you tonight, you know, is all about helping out your fellow man. You know, I'm going to be quite honest with you. I have a real tough problem with the fact that our government is relying more and more on privatization of charities to help the people in this nation. Shouldn't be that way. You know, it should be that you and I and all of our compadres who believe in the way that we believe, and you know, should be able to, you know, tell our congressmen, look, you need to help these poor folks, you know, you need to help these folks who are less fortunate, you need to have a realistic structure of immigration, you need to have a realistic way for people to come into this country and to be able to make a better life for themselves, you need to have a realistic way for the people who are already here in this country to be able to make a life for themselves instead of going to work for Walmart for $6 an hour and then not even, you know, right on the borderline for Medicare benefits or for welfare benefits right now. What, they just cut that stuff this past week, right? So I got to tell you, you know, when you're sitting down and you're contemplating the reason for the season, think about some of the things that, you know, today is the day that the Christians mark as the birthday of Jesus Christ. Jesus was not, and I'm not a biblical scholar by any stretch of the imagination. All I know is that everything that I ever heard about Jesus saying anything, Jesus didn't say kick their ass. Okay? Jesus didn't say that the poor should die first so the rich can live. Jesus didn't say exploit the workers. Jesus didn't say, you know, screw the workers and fly off in a private jet. You know? Jesus didn't say anything along those lines. Jesus, if Jesus said anything, you know, what he said was, help thy neighbor. What he said was, I think it's Matthew 25:14. I've seen this 1,000 times and now I can't say it because I can't remember it. I'm sure someone will remind me in the chat room, but essentially what he says is you know, if you help the least of these, you know, then you're showing what you're about, you know, essentially. So if you believe in that God, and if you believe in those spiritual tenets, as 80% of these people that I just read in this poll supposedly they say they believe in them, you know, is that fantasy world or is that real world? I mean, do they, if they really believe in those tenets, if they really believe in that religion, if they really believe in that Christ, then why do we have a war going on? And why do we have people starving? And why do we have people homeless? And why do we have, you know, all of this injustice in society? And why are African Americans killed at 3 times the rate of white Americans in our prisons in execution chairs? I'll tell you why. Because we have a long way to go to make this society an equitable one. We have a long way to go to create the kind of society that our spiritual principles tell us we need to have. We have a long way to go to be participants in a society that is equitable and that is just and that creates fairness for all. So when you're doing your prayers tonight, tomorrow, the next day, remember to say a prayer for somebody who's less fortunate than you are. Remember to take the time to be grateful. Remember to take the time to have some gratitude for the fact that you know, we're not, that you may not be living in a war zone, you know. and then tomorrow get up off your ass and go do some action to make that happen for someone else. Okay? Tomorrow get up and make a decision and take some action and go say, you know what? I don't live in a war zone today. You know, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to make it happen for someone else to not live in a war zone tomorrow. 100,000 people have died in Iraq as a result of our bombs and our guns and our fighting. They deserve freedom like we do, yes. They also deserve freedom from violence. And you know what? That's a gift we can give them. It's about 58 minutes after the hour. My name is Bruce Birch. This is All Things Reconsidered. Peter Werby was not on tonight. Will not be on. Well, he was. I'm sorry. He was on at 11 o'clock for interviews, but I just ran over his time tonight because I just, you know, he said last week he wasn't going to be on. So if you would, you know, I'm just going to let me go ahead and pull up our little closing deal. Let's see, there we are. Yeah, this is Bruce Birch, and you've been listening to All Things Reconsidered. This was our 21st show. Today is December the 25th, 2005, Christmas Day. If you would like to interact with us some more, you can come to the website allthingsreconsidered.org. There is a discussion forum there that you can sign up and post to your heart's content. I'd like to also remind you that if you go to our website at allthingsreconsidered.org, you can sign up to our email list, which will help you get updates for upcoming shows. Next week, our show will feature Mark Rudd, the second half of the interview that I played tonight. Also, we'll you know, do our standard call-in, and we'll do our commentary, and we'll do some other things. But I do encourage you, if you'd like to, we also have a listener map on our homepage, so go there too. Just go check out our homepage and poke around a little bit. Add your name in there. You know what? We're all here because we believe in something. Now let's take that belief and put it into action. This has been Bruce Birch for All Things Reconsidered.